Welcome back, Noodle Squad. I am your host, Noel Mulkey, and you are listening to Noodle On with Noel, the podcast where we talk about anything to get your brain noodling with lots of noodle puns. And I am on my 9th episode, and I'm absolutely loving podcasting and sharing what we noodle on about with the world. So, it is It is January 14th. So we have a big special announcement. The U.S. government is deciding to ban TikTok, the platform that I have built a big community on over the last 5 years. Apparently, it's going to go dark. The servers, the U.S. servers, will go dark in 5 days. 5 days, and we say goodbye to the app that 170 million Americans use. And I didn't even want to make a podcast about this subject, and it won't be all about this subject, this episode. But I want to say, as of recent news, I think it's hilarious. Like, I don't think you couldn't write this, that all the Americans, the American government, wanted to ban TikTok to protect Americans' data from China, right? Is what we're being told, at least, is the reason, okay? But then Americans discovered this app called Red Note. It's been around in China for 12 years. It's like a TikTok-Pinterest hybrid, from my understanding. And it's called Red Note. And it's literally like the Chinese version of TikTok, like even more Chinese than the current TikTok app. And it's now, after like 3 days or 4 days left to go with the TikTok ban, it is now number one in the app store because all the Americans are going over there and using that and just giving away our data for free. Because nobody give a fuck. You think we give a fuck? You don't think every other app has our data? So I'm heated about this topic. So I will put the explicit episode trigger on this one because I don't know if I can hold my tongue about this subject. You know, it's an app 170 million users use. It's 7 million small businesses. I literally built the last 4 or 5 years I've had a career, so to speak, because of TikTok. I can't believe how much it's given me. And whether you're in America or outside America, obviously an entire like 170 million American users gone from the app is really going to shake the platform no matter which side of the aisle you're on. Like, I don't, obviously, like, people in Canada, I guess they're just not going to see American videos anymore. So I don't really know how it's going to work, but I find that so ridiculously funny that we all found a different platform from China. Like, everything they worked and tried to do with this ban is completely nullified because we found a different app that's even more Chinese. And then the CEO of the new app, Red Note, came on to welcome TikTok refugees, as we call them. And he's telling us the servers were overloaded because of how many people are joining and that they're working day and night tirelessly to try to figure out how to make make captions and how we can now, because it's all in Chinese. It's all, oh my God, I'm so stupid. What is it called? Don't get mad at me. Not hieroglyphics. What are they called? Characters, Chinese characters. It's all Chinese characters. So it's all very, very Mandarin. And anyways, go follow me on Red Note because that's where we're taking it. And I just think it's cruel and so weird and a really bad precedent if an app came with 170 million users can get banned by the U.S. government before a ton of other stuff like that are actually like bad. And literally the U.S. Americans are screaming at the U.S. government saying, we don't give a shit if the Chinese have our data. Every other place has our data already. Like, what is it that we don't know? Yeah, I think it's hilarious. And I'm glad that every bit of legislation and work they tried to do to get this passed to where TikTok's banned is blowing up in their face. I think it's hilarious. and I hope they fail. I'm so done with this, with like, come on, man. Like, go work on feeding, go work on, like, you know, infrastructure or feeding the homeless or working on, you know, Oklahoma is 49th in education. And I just find it so crazy that that's the one thing the government unanimously voted on. And you know what? It's because the little people are talking. They do not like the little people talking because we're figuring out stuff. TikTok, over the last 4 years, is the only platform that really unified mass groups of people to make change, you know? And I don't think the government likes that. And they are going to do everything they can to stop it, which is the real reason that we're saying goodbye to it in 5 days. So, yeah, that's where I got my start on social media, sort of. And that's where I found success. And that's where I guess this chapter ends, you know? It's really sad. And I'm not happy about it. But I'm think this is so funny. I don't know. I just find it hilarious that it's funny. It's funny. You can't write this stuff, people. You can't. Like, how I guarantee you none of them thought about how we're just gonna go find an even more Chinese app. Anyways, and I started posting on it, and I have 56 followers already on it in less than 6 hours. Yay. I can't read my replies. Remember, mind you, everything's in Chinese. So it's very hard to read your replies. But I can screenshot it and then you can put it into ChatGPT and read some of the comments. But they are working on a translation feature, from what my understanding is. They're working on a translation feature. All right. So that was 8 minutes of this episode about the news from America, but it's big news. It's big news. And one of my goals on TikTok this year was to, well, I had some goals with social media this year, and I brought my planner down for people looking and not listening, for people on the YouTube looking at my video. I have my planner down because I wanted to give you guys some tips about planning, which is really fun because I love planning. I'm such a planner. But before we get into that, we had a giveaway last week, which I will announce on my Instagram story, the winner of the Pit Viper giveaway. Thank you all for entering and stay tuned for more giveaways. Okay. Today we are doing eight myths that drive experts crazy. Okay, so these are fitness myths, right? Fitness myths. Sorry, that is a very hard word for me to say for some reason. Myths. So I picked a topic with the main word being very hard to say. But these are 8 fitness myths that drive experts crazy. So there's fitness, you know, there's fitness influencers, fitness experts. You really don't have to have any credibility to be in the fitness world. And like, you ask, okay, so what's my credibility for sharing these infos? This is from the New York Times. These are from the New York Times, and it's a fun article that I actually, like, strangely, after 10 years in the fitness industry, agree with a lot of these. Like, a lot of this is like kind of BS. And obviously, you know, this is from New York Times. It's called 8 fitness myths that drive experts crazy. And I'll link the article source so you have my sources, because this is my source. So maybe it could be completely wrong. This is the source I found. And I'm pretty sure the New York Times is double peer reviewed. And experts mean people who actually have degrees in, you know, sports physiology, exercise science, not just like any old Joe Schmo Instagram coach one-on-one DM me for a special surprise, like, person. These are actual experts. By expert, it means scientists and doctors who went to school for this. Okay. Well, but yeah, it's a New York Times article, and I wanted to read some of the fitness myths because actually some of these do drive me crazy also, and I don't consider mine an expert at all. when done right, exercise can be a veritable miracle drug. And I've always said that exercise is the best medicine. It is the best medicine. There is nothing that can turn your day around more than going on a run. A 30-minute run outside, it's just like all the synapses in your brain, the pathways that have been closed overnight and need opening, just all turn on. The blood starts rushing to all parts of your body, to your head, mainly to your head. And like you can think. And it's like this clarity that comes over you. And really, I have been on every psych medication in the book my whole life. I've been in therapy, psychiatrist. I think I started therapy in like seventh grade, and they put me on Seroquel in like eighth grade. So, and since then, I've never been off a psych medication. Well, that's not true. Not true. I was off for 2 years, two years. And then that's when we discovered that I'm bipolar 2 disorder, which will, ooh, that's a good subject for another episode. Okay. But like I said, the psych meds, anyways, I know what works and what doesn't. I've been on Seroquel, Lamictal, Paxil, Buspar, Wellbutrin, this and that, gabapentin, all this stuff for no reason. And I find it hilarious. That's not the word. I think I said hilarious because I said hilarious like 8 times during the preview of this episode. But I think it's amazing that literally the best medication out of all of that is exercise. I'm telling you guys, nothing feels better than going on a run. So anyways, I love that. That was a major green flag of this article. I love that they put that, that, you know, it can be a miracle drug. Here's the thing though. You follow the advice of the wrong people, you can set yourself up for injury. All right, take the sit-up. Once considered the gold standard of core exercises, we now know it can make low back pain worse. That is true. No one does sit-ups anymore. That's not a thing. I mean, I do them because I want abs. But if you don't do them right, it's totally, totally not like – I've actually heard they're counterproductive. One time my Pilates instructor told me that like doing a sit-up is – doing a sit-up is like crunching your abs – making it actually more difficult to breathe if you get – there's, like, better ways to get abs and, like, a better way to get a core, from my understanding. Shout out to Audrey. I don't know if you listen to this podcast, but I love you. You were a great Pilates instructor. Fitness culture is rife with such misconceptions thanks to constantly evolving science and fitness influencers who share tips based on anecdote and gym lore. You know – we're in the age of social media. So I talk about social media every episode. It's literally like anyone can just give you advice and you are like, is this person here? I am doing it. You guys don't know if I'm credible. This could be complete misinformation. What I'm saying right now, it's not, this is a real double peer-reviewed article from the New York Times, but like, well, who's to stop me? Like, what am I qualified for? You know, I could be completely making this shit up. I'm not, but it's just so easy, you know, it's just so easy. So much misinformation out there, but it's true. So Brad, I'm going to mess up your name, Brad Schnaufield, a professor of exercise science, see, exercise science professors, that's who you listen to, PhDs, all right? Not Joey Fitness on Instagram with 80K followers and a one-on-one coaching plan. A professor of exercise science at Lemon College in New York. Once those opinions are this is the word I've never seen before. How embarrassing. I'm not illiterate, but I have never seen this word before. Dismeditate it? You're kidding, right? How embarrassing. Like the one article I decided to read for a podcast episode, there's a word I've never seen. Disseminate it. Disseminate it. I've seen that word. I don't know if I've ever used that word. Once those opinions are disseminated to the public and take hold, they are hard to change. Rumors, basically a lot of fitness, like this could be said with any subject, you know, ballet or cooking, or once these rumors start. Yeah, like gym, you know, we all heard about how if you swallow gum or if you swallow a watermelon seed, you know, the watermelon will grow in your stomach. That's a good example of this. It's like, yeah, these are like big, big myths, but they've taken hold, and it's very hard to turn these around, because these are the ones that they hear the most among their clients and patients, and they wish they could debunk them once and for all. So that is where we are. 8 fitness myths. Okay. Oh, also, I had it was fun because when I actually read this, I like know all of these. Not to be like, no, I don't want to like, you know, toot my own horn, but like I knew all of these. So maybe I could have written this article without a PhD. I'm kidding. But I did know all, I could have told you all these, because these are all very pretty obvious myths. But myth 1, you should stretch before you work out. And I've even made videos about this, friends. There's 2 types of stretching. Okay. There's static stretching and there's, why is every word not coming to me today? Dynamic stretching, static and dynamic stretching, right? And one of the worst things you can do is static stretching. If you've taken a high school gym class, you've probably been told to spend a few minutes stretching before exercising. But recent research has found that stretching before exercising is ineffective for preventing injury and may actually work against you. That's because stretching a muscle for more than 90 seconds temporarily diminishes its strength. You just transcendently weakened all the muscle groups you're trying to train. Yeah. So if you like wake up and you're stiff and sore, and before you go on a run, the first thing you do is even stretch your muscles even more. Yeah. No, don't do that. It's now like even more at risk to get injured. And I also would argue that stretching is better. Stretching feels better like after a run, because all your blood's in your muscles and you've done your physical activity. Now it's like stretch them out. Okay. It feels way better. And there's like tons of YouTube stuff you can YouTube about dynamic stretching, like the karaoke. If anybody in my age bracket, like the 90s babies, played soccer, you guys all did the karaoke and like lunges and like butt kicks and all that. Do that. For the most effective preparation to work out, try a dynamic warm-up. Oh, I'm such a fan of dynamic warm-ups. I love them. A series of active exercises that get your blood flowing and gently stress your muscles. Save your stretching for a separate time, he said. Like at night before you go to bed, one of my favorite things to do at night is stretch. I love it. It's my routine. Myth 2, you need to lift heavy weights to build muscle. Not true, said Dr. Schofield. So the myth is you need to lift heavy to build muscle. A significant body of research now shows that lifting relatively light weights for, say, 30 repetitions is just as effective as building muscle and strength as lifting weights that feel heavier for 5 to 12 reps. It's a matter of personal preference. Well, I like that, you know. I'm definitely on the side of 6 really hard lifts as opposed to 30 somewhat hard. But I pretty much only do like squats and deadlifts and lat pull downs and split leg RDLs. Is that what they're called? I take that back. I do a lot. But I've always been on the side of like heavier weight. I like it, but I love that they said it's a personal preference, because you can just do a lot more and a lot less. I've always heard that to build like bulk and be strong, you want like heavy weights, like really hard, but you lift like 5 of them, as opposed to if you want like lean muscle and just to put on definition and tone, you do short reps. Yeah. Like 30 of bicep curls. But not that you're straining yourself. You're just, you know, getting in the work, breaking down the muscle tissue. That one's boring. So, okay. Well, I guess anyone who's listening to this already knows, probably already aware. We can honestly skip this one, but running destroys your knees. I think at this point, everyone already knows that's a myth. Although it really did destroy my mom's knees. She's had a knee replacement and it's been really bad for my hips this year. I don't know if this is a good... No, I'm kidding. It's definitely a myth. Like, it doesn't just directly destroy your knees, but I don't know. It's definitely not, like, super good on your body. Fear not. Research has debunked the notion that running increases your risk of osteoarthritis. My mom has that. And even suggests it can protect your knees against the condition. In fact, not moving increases your risk of developing osteoarthritis along with age, weight, and genetics. For years, experts thought that our knees were like tires. You drive the car a lot, you burn through your tire tread, Dr. Goldman said. That is not true because our body is dynamic. Our joints can regenerate themselves, especially when we are regularly active. That said, running can definitely lead to knee pain or injury if you train too aggressively. Okay, that's where I got in trouble. Probably my mom too. We definitely don't take things easy or increase slowly. I do think it's funny that yes, we regenerate. So we're not, I love this actually. I love that. Like when I always love positive talk about running. So I never want anyone to say like running will kill your gains or something like gym bros say, or running. I'm all for getting as many people to run as possible. It's like one of the points of my social media. Just go try running. Give it a chance. It'll change your life. So I do love this because I do know. Yeah, I know. I'm very, familiar with running myths. And I want to say something else about running. If you're new and just trying to find exercise podcasts and you're new here, welcome. I get asked a lot what shoes I use, what shoes to wear. You guys, it's the hardest question. It's a question I can't answer. I can give you the stuff that's worked for me, but you have got to find your own individual shoe. Go to a running store. They will give you multiple options, especially ones that have been established. Like big chain running stores are okay. But if you go to like a local one that's been there forever and you can tell the workers are like real hardcore, like they're skinny. They have like leather skin from, you know, being out in the sun for years and years. Those folks know their stuff. I'm thinking of Tulsa Runner and Runner's World in Tulsa. My old running stores I frequented back in Tulsa. Like, I miss them. Shout out to them. They know their stuff. It's not a big Fleet Feet brand. It's like its own little, but they've been there for years and they have a great selection. Go there and you will find out. Yeah, ask the experts. They will find a shoe that fits for you. It's not one size fits all. It's so individualized, you guys. I can tell you that I've used Brooks Ghosts for years and love them, but literally someone who asked me that might try those on and they'll be like, this is awful. I can't wear these. I doubt that would happen, but yeah. So basically the point is, besides running destroys your knees, make sure you find an individual running shoe that works for you. It's literally not one size fits all, you guys. It's not. It's like a snowflake. Not every shoe's the same. Not every foot's the same. Running can definitely lead to knee pain or injury if you train too aggressively, said Dr. Jordan Metzl, a sports medicine physician at the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York. I love that they're interviewing doctors. This is a big, big, big green flag, everyone. If you're in an article, listen to doctors. Okay. Myth 4, walking is enough to keep you fit as you age. Walking is popular among older Americans for good reason. It's been shown to lower the risk of heart disease. These are all very obvious. But I think what's interesting is, I think what they really mean by walking is enough to keep you fit as you age is, I think a lot of people, assume that exercise has to be torture and like vigorous and hard, and you can make it hard. And for me personally, I like the hard workouts better because I feel better afterwards. But really, like, movement, especially as you get older, is what I'm hearing is sounds like really it's fine. It's just something. It gets your just don't be sitting. I don't think humans were meant to be sedentary. Is that the right word? Sedentary and just sitting all day long. Starting in your 30s, your muscle mass progressively declines, she said. So you need I'm 30. Wow. Oh, that hit. I'm 30. As of last month, I turned 30. Oh my God, my muscle mass is progressively declining, she said. So you also need to focus on strength training. People can do daily activities with minimal amount of cardiovascular fitness, she said. But when they don't have the strength or the muscle power to do daily activities, that's when they lose their independence. Complement walks with at least two 20-minute strength training sessions every week. Oh, okay. So do two 20-minute strength training sessions every week along with your walks. That's a really sad thought. Yeah, I guess when you are getting older and older and if you can't move or walk, you know, to your car, that's when you start needing help. Sad thought, but I think everyone knows this, but maybe I should stop saying everyone knows this because a lot of people don't know this stuff. Maybe it's just something I've heard because I grew up with doctors, but you're right. Humans were not meant to be sedentary. We're not meant to be sitting down all day. We're just not. Modifications are for beginners. Modifications are for beginners. Choosing to do a less strenuous version of an exercise, say a push-up or a plank with your knees on the ground, doesn't mean you're weak or novice. It's basically saying stop ego lifting. Okay. Our bodies require different things on different days. It's so true. It's so true. Like, I'm not going to go in there and crush it on the bike every day. In fact, today I did a 2.5-hour bike workout with 6 by 10 minutes at a certain wattage. Wattage is how much power I'm putting out. I did 6 by 10 minutes at a certain wattage, and that certain wattage, let's go with 270, was actually feeling a lot harder than it's supposed to. I think I did this last week too. It was like way easier last week. That's because every day is different. You might wake up and feel horrible. So instead of like, oh, it's only for beginners that you're doing those, oh my God, it's so sexist. They used to call them girl pushups. They literally used to call them girl pushups in my gym class, where you put knees on the ground instead of your feet and do a pushup. Your knees are on the ground. Man, everyone was so sexist. But yeah, it's perfectly okay. You can still get your push-ups in and modify them. It's still doing something for you, you know? And I do hate that they think modifications are for beginners. I don't like that. I don't like it at all. So I'm glad Stephanie Roth Goldberg is letting us all know that it's a myth that modifications are for beginners. I feel like a lot of this is really obvious, but I definitely think their target demographic, the New York Times target demographic, is not full-time triathletes. Okay, myth six. Runners and cyclists don't need to strength train their lower body. Ooh, that is a big myth. Amanda Katz, a certified strength and running coach in New York City, said she often has to convince clients who run or cycle that they also need to strength train their lower bodies. Oh man, I was so in this camp for so long, for like 5 years. I thought since I'm running and biking a lot as a triathlete, I didn't want to lift weights because I didn't want to like tire my legs out more and like be able to hit and run fast and bike fast and hit my certain sessions. And I'm like, oh my God, was I totally thinking backwards, way, way thinking backwards. That's not how it's supposed to work. I'm like 10 times more strong by lifting stuff than had I just kept with running and biking. Like 10 times more strong. You can just tell. You can just like tell. You're like, wow, I just feel strong. Like your legs feel strong. You know, pounding the pavement or pushing pedals does strengthen your lower body, but it doesn't do enough to stimulate significant muscle growth, she said. A strength training regimen that includes squats, lunges, glute bridges, and pointers can improve bone density and lower your risk of injury and make you a stronger runner or cyclist too. Basically, do strength training. What I'm gathering from this, you guys, is that the fitness experts love strength training and it seems to be overlooked pretty often. Miss Seven, you need 10,000 steps a day to be healthy. Nope. Exercise scientists debunked this one years ago, but many Americans still see it as a benchmark of good health, said Cedric Bryant, the president and chief science officer of the American Council on Exercise. How do you get that job? What a cool job. He's the president and chief science officer of the American Council on Exercise. What? Who knew that was a thing? I didn't even know we had an American Council on Exercise. Did anyone know that? Am I the only one who didn't know that? What is it? Is it just like a group that meets and talks about exercise? Okay, anyway. The myth traces back to the 1960s when a Japanese clock manufacturer mass-produced a pedometer with a name that translated to 10,000 steps meter. Unfortunately, it's taken a life of its own because the research clearly doesn't support there being anything magical about that goal. Dr. Bryant said, the latest research suggests that the health benefits of walking appear to plateau at around 7,500 steps, but even as few as 4,000 steps per day can reduce the risk of dying from any cause. I need to get my steps in. I started my fitness journey with a Fitbit without a screen. It was just like syncs to your phone. I never knew if that stuff was accurate, but I remember going crazy and wanting to get my 10,000 steps a day. It worked for me. But I guess they're saying you don't have to set such a crazy goal. Although I don't think 10,000 steps is such a crazy goal. In my opinion, that seems pretty small, right? Because 10,000 steps is like maybe a mile. Oh, I could be so wrong on that. Someone's going to quote me. Or quote me and tell me I'm wrong. I want to know if I'm wrong. But I could have sworn 10,000 steps like actually doesn't add up to very much. I would look it up. But my phone's over there filming this. Okay. Myth 8. Taking an ice bath after a tough workout improves recovery. Oh my gosh, I have something to say about this. Okay, plunging into an icy tub after a difficult workout can feel like a safeguard against injury since it helps to reduce inflammation. But there's a problem with this. Not all inflammation is bad inflammation, Dr. Goldman said. If you jump into an ice tub after every workout, you slow or stop the repair process. When you work out, you create useful inflammation by strategically stressing the muscles, and as the body heals, it builds strength, he said. If you want to mend a specific injury after a workout, Dr. Goldman recommended either icing the injury itself or waiting a day before taking a cold dip to give your muscles time to start the repair process. I absolutely loved this when I first heard it because, listen, guys, ice baths are, everyone thinks an ice bath a day or blah, 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 blah. First of all, as a 12-time Ironman finisher, I have taken my fair share of ice baths to see if they kind of like, if I can get into this. Is this something I like and like think it's working? I might be in the minority here. We used to have a pool in my old backyard. So I would go on after my hard runs or hard workouts in the winter. That's the ice bath. You just go in the pool because it's freezing. I'll tell you what. Beyond it being like torture, like really, really uncomfortable, I'm sure you can get used to that. You can get used to anything. Beyond that part, I don't think they did anything. Like the next day I would still be sore. And I'm like, what was, like, these aren't, I don't know what the magic is behind these because they're horrible. It takes like 3 minutes before you go numb. And then afterwards, like, I guess, I mean, like I can see how it can kind of like be refreshing. And like afterwards you have kind of a placebo, I think it's a placebo effect, but I mean, obviously there's tons of ice bath people out there who will live and die by the ice bath. But I have always heard like you need to make your body good at recovering. You need to make your body good at itself recovering, like train your body to where it can recover itself without all the Normatec and the ice baths and the this and that. Like you want to be able to recover yourself, train your body to recover its inflammation by itself. Instead, doing all these things that make you recover faster, you lose some of the repair process because the repair process is what makes you stronger, obviously. But we need our body to know how to repair itself. not have all these intravenous, wrong word, not have all these extra curricular intro, what is it called? All these extra things that you can add to your recovery process when you just really need sleep and your body needs to learn how to recover itself. So like foam rolling and stuff, like I've always heard like the more you do it, the less your body like kind of remembers how to recover and blah, blah, blah. Basically I'm agreeing with this guy because I have literally never had a positive or negative reaction to ice baths. They just like don't do anything. Like I wouldn't say like I'll never do one again because I don't think they work, which I don't think they work. But like I might do it because it's kind of like it is fun. Like I see how they're refreshing, but I have never had they don't do anything for me. And then when you look at the science or listen to scientists who also say it's like not doing anything, it's kind of like this isn't doing anything. The same rule applies to over-the-counter pain medications like NSAIDs, okay, ibuprofen. Because they're anti-inflammatory, you should only take them after a workout if you're treating an injury. Otherwise, you risk counteracting your training. Cold water immersion is a very good anti-inflammatory tool, but you've got to use it in a time where you actually want to prevent inflammation and not as a prescription after every workout. For overall recovery after a workout, research suggests saunas may be safer and more effective. I'll always choose a sauna over an ice bath any day of the week. But I will say, I think that scared me, that fact, because I heard that before I even read this article. I heard about how all the other tools for recovery, like ice baths and this and that and this, when you interject them into the recovery process, as opposed to just letting your body do it itself, it actually is counterproductive and can ruin your training. And ever since someone told me that, or where I don't know where I heard it, probably TikTok or something, I was like paranoid. I'm like, I don't want to get an ice bath because it's going to ruin my gains, you know? And obviously there's super fit people who take ice baths every day. So it's not like totally counterproductive. But I also was looking for every excuse to never have to do an ice bath again because they're not – like, I don't know how people find those – it's just a – why do – I don't know how people can get into that. That's not true. I can get into a routine that's miserable. You can get into any type of routine. I stand by that. So I do see how, like, how horrible an ice bath feels and – but you can, like, train yourself to, like – even, dare I say, look forward to them. And that's not to say I'll never do one again, but I love hearing that it's a myth because I always thought it was a myth. Literally, you guys, you can go like, okay, so I remember vividly every Sunday in the fall when the pool started getting really cold, I would go on like a 12 or 13 mile run and then come home and just, instead of going inside, literally going right to the pool in the backyard, pulling up my shorts and getting my legs in there and trying and doing like a 5 to 10 minute ice bath. And then the next day I'd be like, oh, this should work. And it never felt like it did anything. I feel like still just as sore had I not done it. I was like saying, hopefully this worked. Like, hopefully this is a thing. Is this a thing? This has to work. And it never did. It never did. I never felt any difference. I didn't feel worse, I don't think, but I didn't really don't think I felt better. Like, it just didn't do anything for me. Yeah. So that is my take on these 8 fitness myths. I thought that would be a fun article today. And we are just now getting into 2025. And 2025, it's going to be a good year, you guys. You know why I think it's going to be a good year? I don't have an actual reason why I think it's going to be a good year. It's just a sense. It's just a feeling. And maybe because last year is very easy to beat in terms of good years, because last year was a pretty rough year for me, like really rough. I got injured twice. I gained a ton of weight. I got really depressed and had one of my worst Ironmans ever after dedicating 10 years of my life to this sport. But I don't think it's that bad. Like, having a bad Ironman is really like, unless you're like getting paid and like losing sponsors for doing bad, if really the worst if really one of the worst things that happens to you is you have a bad Ironman in Hawaii, then you have a pretty good life. And that is kind of, well, no, the worst thing that happened to me last year was two hip injuries where I'm on crutches. That sucked. I also want to say, I do want to start having guests on my podcast. This was fun. This is fun, but I would love to chit chat and interview and practice my interviewing skills. So if you're listening to this, I need you guys to comment. Who do you want on my podcast? Who's a guest you want? Because I want to interview you. I want to interview. I even have a whole other chair set up in case someone ever made it down to St. Albans near Montreal, Canada. 90 minutes away from the Montreal airport, we'd have a chair right here and I would interview you. Maybe one day when I'm bigger. But yes, everyone put in your comment, in the comment section, who I should interview, because I'm like really wanting to get into that side of the podcasting and practice my skills. But this has been another episode of Noodle On with Noel. I hope you enjoyed, and I hope you have a fantastic week. Go check out Red Note if you think that's something that would, I don't know, I'm on it, and it's kind of funny. It's like just a whole new group of people trying to figure out a Chinese app. I don't know, it's hilarious. It's hilarious. I think it's funny. But anyways, guys, this has been another episode of Noodle On with Noel. If you love the show, please rate, review, share, subscribe on YouTube. And we're going to keep this ball rolling. I'm absolutely loving podcasting. Look, 41 minutes went by, and I just talk. We have noodled on. I hope that has gotten your noodle working. Okay, I love you guys. And scene.